Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Aware Show. This is Lisa Garr. And just want to mention to you that we have great videos of a lot of our interviews on our website, which is theawareshow.com. And you can see, if you love hearing the show on the radio, you can always see the videos as well of some of your favorite guests and authors and practitioners and amazing people. And so you can check that out at theawareshow.com. All right. So I've determined this. Aren't we lucky to be alive right now? I mean, think about all of the access that we have to modern day spiritual sages and teachers and all of this. I mean, I remember 10 years ago having to book guests, and they would be so excited to be on the show, and they would, and now when I'm booking guests, they're too busy, which is great. It's a good thing because they're on book tours and they're on speaking tours, and it's wonderful that we have all this, I mean, huge spiritual awakening that's happening. And I don't think we're preaching to the choir anymore. I think this conversation has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And maybe you're in the place in your life right now where you have done your searching. You have looked and searched, and you're done with looking for something outside yourself to fill in that gap. The gap is closed, and you're ready now to really, truly just be, to be free, to be in a place of contribution, to be awake. And that's just what we're talking about today, is awakening. My guest is Arjuna Arda, and he is an awakening coach. He also trains others to become facilitators of awakening, and it's something that can happen. It's a very, very profound thing that can happen on a very simple day-to-day level. He is the author of 8 books, including the bestseller called The Translucent Revolution, so I'm sure he knows a lot about what we're talking about. Featured in O Magazine, his talks have been across the board to Google and all sorts of great places. And he's here to join us about his newest book called Better Than Sex, the Ecstasy Art of Awakening Coaching. Well, hello, Arjuna. Hi.
Hi there, Lisa. Very nice to talk to you again. How are you?
I am fabulous. I'm doing really good. And it's great to have you on my show. I've known you for several years now through the Transformational Leadership Council, and we've never actually spoken on the radio before. One of my shows, we've always just seen each other in person, so this is
awesome. Well, I've been looking forward to it, and I'm glad that today's the day.
Me too. So can you share your story a bit for us about how you went on that journey, what I was talking about a little bit earlier, of searching?
Sure.
Where did you wind up?
Well, you know, for me, the whole idea of a journey was really born out of suffering, you know, and I think actually it was for a lot of people of my generation, of the baby boom generation. I was born in the 1950s to a fairly, I would say, you know, certainly intellectual and probably neurotic family in London. A lot of unhappiness in my family. And you don't really actually think much about that when you're a child. Your family is just your family. You don't really evaluate what kind of hand of cards you've been dealt until you get to be a teenager. When you reach your teen years, that's when you can really compare your lot with other people's and see, oh, this family is not necessarily the same as everybody else's. So that's when I realized, whoa, I'm in trouble, you know. I mean, all the genetic inheritance I've got here leads towards dysfunction and unhappiness. So I looked around at that time. This was now in 1971. I was 14 years old. I looked around, what am I going to do? You know, I'm either going to go crazy or commit suicide or find an intervention. So the obvious choice then was psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, as it was then. And, you know, I met a few shrinks and realized they were in just as much trouble as their patients were.
Interesting, right? You usually don't notice that at that time.
Yeah,
though.
I was pretty desperate. But then you see, this was 1971. You know, the Beatles had just recently hooked up with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. The Hare Krishnas had come to London, and I started to hear about this thing called enlightenment. So I thought, I didn't really know what it was. In fact, I still don't know what it is. But I thought, okay, I'll do that. You know, if they were saying if you just meditate. Just meditate for 20 minutes twice a day, you will become enlightened and all your suffering will go away. So I thought, okay.
Right.
So that led to what is commonly described as being a spiritual seeker. You know, it's a particular sort of lifestyle where you wear certain kind of clothes, you know, you stop saying how you doing, you start saying namaste, you know, it's a whole kind of lifestyle. A particular identity, like you could be a biker guy, you could be an indie, you could be a all kinds of identities. There's an identity of being a spiritual seeker. So I did that for about 20 years.
Wow.
But as spiritual seekers generally discover, it can very easily just become a lifestyle. You know, you go to India, you do this, you do that. But actually, that deep longing for freedom, that deep longing for what your heart knows to be possible, even if your mind can't really understand or articulate it, that deep longing often actually remains even with lots of seeking. And so after 20 years... After 20 years, I met an old man in India. He was a retired army officer. So he wasn't like a yogi or a holy man. He was just a regular guy living in a little house on the outskirts of Lucknow, but he was extremely awake. But he had no teaching, he had no organization, none of that. He was just this regular retired army officer. And he was clearly very much like here. He was really powerfully here. So he looked at me when I first met him, and he said, he was a very gruff man. He said, what do you want? What do you want? And I said, I feel I've been seeking as long as I can remember. I said, what is in the way of finding? Hmm. And he looked at me, Lisa, like it was the most utterly stupid question anybody had ever asked him in his whole life. He frowned. He looked, this guy's a complete idiot. He said, what is in the way of finding? What's in the way of finding? Well, seeking, of course. And I tell you, that I just turned my whole world upside down. In that moment, I realized that all this activity to try and find myself, to try and find peace, was actually noise that was obscuring what I was really looking for.
Hmm. Yes, you can get into that trap of seeking and being spiritual and the experience of it all. And not to throw it away, I mean, it was probably fabulous, but it is a bit of a trap.
Definitely can become a trap after a while. So it took about a week with him, and then there was a moment where it wasn't really that I found anything, it's just like something dropped away. Some kind of unnecessary activity just dropped away, and there was the recognition of who I've always been and actually who everybody is. We are all, when we really pay attention, we are all of us the silence which is hearing sound. We are all of us the infinite consciousness which is aware of limits.
Hmm. Do you think you would have gotten to this realization, though, if you hadn't spent 20 years with that type of practice? I mean, that deep practice of meditation is profound.
Well, you know, it's a very, very, very interesting question. It's a kind of perennial question, you know. Mm. It's like somebody who's been in a prison cell for a long time and they've tried to saw the bars on the windows with a blunt fork, and they've tried to dig their way. They've tried everything. And after 20 years of digging and sawing and jumping through trying to jump high enough to get through the skylight, they've tried everything. After 20 years in exhaustion, they give up and lean against the door, and it swings open, and they realize it was never locked, you know?
Interesting.
It is an interesting question. But here's what I can tell you, okay, is since then there's a whole story which we can maybe discuss or maybe another time, but there's a whole story that I became a kind of a teacher for a while, but I really didn't like it. I didn't like the implied hierarchy of somebody being a teacher and other people being kind of followers. So after only a few years, Punjiji asked me to teach, and after a few years I realized, you know, let's try this in a different way. Let's try something we haven't tried before. Instead of somebody being the teacher and everybody else asking questions, instead I experimented with actually training people for how to ask the right questions and show up in the right way that they can facilitate awakening for others. And what I discovered, this was a great revolution, this is 1995, what I discovered was that actually anybody can facilitate awakening in another human being if they just have an open heart and an innocent disposition. So the whole kind of mythology we've developed around somebody being enlightened and this whole, you know, it's all actually smoke and mirrors. You know, it's what is actually required to guide somebody into recognition of their innate brilliance, of the deep love which they really are. What is required is actually innocence, an open heart, an open mind, and the ability to ask the right questions. So this has actually turned into a very sophisticated coaching method, which I've been able to train now 1,500 people all over the world to become practitioners of awakening coaching. And in answer to your question, you asked about, well, would this have been the same without years of practice? Well, let me tell you, I train coaches who often have a background in what we might call spirituality, but their clients and my clients are not spiritual people at all. I work with executives in some of the biggest technology companies in the world, including Google. I work with policymakers in Washington, D.C., and scriptwriters in Hollywood, and directors in Hollywood. And I work with people who are making a big difference to the world, because that's what excites me. I want to work with people who are really making a difference. And they usually have no background in meditation. Mm. And what I've discovered is when someone is really on focus, when someone is really focused on making a difference to the world, they can have this kind of awakening very, very quickly.
Ah.
And actually more quickly and more easily than if you've built up a lot of spiritual concepts. So this is fantastically good news.
Uh-huh. It's almost like a zone of being in this place of awakening. It doesn't require the years and years. You said something interesting, though, when I was reading. What remains is a limitless presence, perfectly at peace and missing nothing.
Yes.
Sometimes people who tend to be hyper-focused are only satisfied when they get to the goal, and then they're still not satisfied. Though, what's the difference? Yeah.
Well, that's why we bring coaching, you see. That's why that's the role that we perform. It's because it awakening coaching can facilitate a dramatically transformed relationship to the world. Now, the kind of default relationship that we all of us have to reality, and everybody's familiar with this, is one of desire. You know, I want more. I want more for me. I want a better seat on the airplane. I want more money. I want more fame. I want more Facebook followers. I want more sex. I want a better partner. I want a bigger house. That's how we live. We want constant upgrade, which means that we live, actually, most of us, in a kind of unquestioned disposition of lack. I'm missing something, and if I could just get that, which I've seen advertised, then I would be okay. Now, the beautiful thing about guiding innocent, creative people into moments of awakening is that as soon as you have a taste, and a taste is enough, you know, as soon as you have a taste of your true nature as without boundaries, you discover yourself to be the source of everything you've been longing for. You discover that you are infinite. You are actually infinitely loving and infinitely creative, which means if you are a creative person, a generous person, a person who wants to make a difference, your relationship to reality is transformed from one of acquisition to one of contribution. You actually transform from consumerism to contribution, you see? That's the big shift, is now you don't need anything. You don't want anything. You're whole. But you can make a huge difference to the world. You know, an example of this, I know he had various other quirks, but a really good example of this is Steve Jobs, who was initially fired by the board from Apple.
Right.
Went on to found Next Computers and Pixar. But then they brought him back on because Apple was struggling so much. And he came back on as the CEO of Apple for $1 a year. There was no guarantee of any bonuses or anything. He came on at $1 a year. Well, of course, he turned the company around to be the most by the time he died, it was the most wealthy company in the world. And of course, he got a lot of bonuses, but he was willing to come back and do his job for $1 a year. And I'm the same. You know, I'm not comparing myself to Steve Jobs, but I wanted this to be infectious. I love what I do so much. I love talking to you right now. I don't even think about if I'm going to earn money or not from anything. I love what I do. I wake up in the morning. This is all I want to do is spread this. And The people I work with, they develop the same relationship to life, that they find their contribution. It becomes so consuming, so passionate, so juicy, that you really forget about what you're going to get back. The joy is in the delivery of your gift.
So you're not missing anything. You're not wanting for anything. And I would love to know how you, because I met your son and he seemed just magnetic. And yeah. I didn't get a chance to talk to him that much. But how does this translate into the younger generation? He's what, 20-something?
22. Yeah.
Is it easier absorbed by his generation?
Yes, but here's the thing. Here's the deal. And I've actually, he is trained now as an awakening coach. He's one of the people I've trained. And he's on fire with this. But here's the thing. What I've noticed is people under 30, they have absolutely no interest that I can see in following a guru or a teacher or following any kind of ism or any tradition. They want it raw. They want the raw, real deal, and they will not tolerate hierarchy. And I totally support that. I totally, totally am behind it. I think they've got a much higher level of sanity than my generation had. So that's why awakening coaching actually appeals so much to younger people. I mean, probably half the people I train are under 30 because they love the fact that this is peer-based. There's no guru. There's no holy book. I'm not a Hindu or a Buddhist or anything else. I'm just appealing to people getting in touch with their deepest longing, their deepest intuition of who they are, and to actualizing that.
So you can teach this to anyone?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
What exactly is it that you teach?
Well, I train people to be coaches, Lisa. So I train people in 7 innate brilliances, which are described in this book, Better Than Sex. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, you know, you're going to get guided by an enlightened guru from, you know, the Orient somewhere, we train people in the 7 innate brilliances, which allow anybody to be a brilliant facilitator of awakening to anybody else. So these are described in the book. So I can just label them for you now, and we can talk about them if you want. One is inspired certainty, which means that you have an unwavering certainty of reality, of who you actually are and who your client really is underneath the story. The second is absolute presence, that you're trained in how to be completely here with another human being, free of internal and external distraction. The third is radical awakening, which means that you're trained how to guide someone from being distracted in thoughts and reactive feelings to a recognition of their true nature in 10 minutes or less. You see, we're interested in immediate gratification. You see, 10 minutes or less, you can guide someone home. And that's we do that. Every coach I train knows how to do that.
You can guide them out of their mind and out of their busyness and their thought process into the moment.
We can taste that together on the radio. It's not difficult.
I would love to, yes.
Yeah, so number 4 is radical releasing, because then we've got to inquire, well, what gets in the way? Why should people experience difficulty in resting in who they really are? That's kind of illogical. You know, you could lose your car keys. You could even forget where you parked your car in one of these big mall, you know, parking lots. But how could you lose yourself? That's completely illogical. But people do. They say, I lost it, you know. And so we have to look into what gets in the way. And the answer is resistance, you see, that we discover whenever there's a feeling of separation from yourself or from the big reality that gives us life, there is always some element of resistance present. So radical releasing is the 4th of these innate brilliances, and it's simply a way to dissolve resistance. And again, we're talking about 5 to 7 minutes. This is not rocket science. It's simple and it's easy. The 5th is empowerment practice. You see, we are creatures of habit. We tend to live our lives in homeostasis, which means that we've gotten used to certain habits, and the people around us have gotten used to certain habits as well. That kind of automatic habit-based behavior is what keeps us in allegiance to limitation. So we need simple practices that can allow us to live life in a different way, to live life in a more creative, conscious, and humorous way. The sixth is midwifing the unique gift, which means that our coaches are trained in how to recognize the unique gift that comes through a particular person that could not come through anybody else in exactly the same way. There's a way that you do your radio show, which is why you're so good at it. Nobody else could do the Aware Show the way that you do it, you see? That's a unique gift. Nobody could, if you took a year off, nobody could step into your shoes and exactly duplicate what you do. That's because you're living your unique gift, and we believe in really helping everybody to discover and to live their unique gift. And number seven is called spontaneous creation, which means that you learn how to generate energetic frequencies out of nothing. Simple example would be people want to be happy, right? Everybody wants to be happy, but we try to get happiness from getting the right house and the right car and the right relationship. Well, there's a way to learn how to generate the frequency of happiness out of nothing, right?
Within yourself.
Within yourself. And then, of course, your life rearranges itself to be consistent with the energy you've just created. So those are the seven innate brilliances, which are all mapped out in really vivid, practical detail in this book, Better Than Sex.
And you have to explain the title, of course, because it's a great title. Yes.
Oh, gosh, we're trying to do everything.
Sorry.
Well, you can give us a quick one. I did the title, okay, is how the title came about. I was teaching in the United Nations in Vienna. The United Nations has three global centers, one in New York, one in Geneva, and one in Vienna. So I was teaching the United Nations in Vienna. And then we did a weekend seminar. So there were people there from all over the world, of course, United Nations, you know, and some of them were actually living in Vienna and some were staying there in hotels. So we did this seminar. And on Saturday morning, with the help of some of my trained coaches, we guided everybody there into radical awakening. So they all had this doubt-free taste of their true nature, without boundaries, of being love itself. They recognize who they are deeper than the story. So we went through Saturday, and then on Saturday evening, they all went home to their houses or their hotels. They all went home. And the next day, they came back. Sunday morning, we reconvened. We were in a big circle around the room, right, so we could all see each other. And I asked everybody to tell me how they were doing. So somebody said, wow, you know, I felt so much creativity when I went home. I was able to work on my book that has been stuck, and it just started to flow again. Somebody said, I felt so much love. I got together with my wife, and it was just so exquisite and romantic. And somebody said, you know, I felt all the stress just leaving my body. Everybody had a great story to tell. And we got all the way around to the last person. It was a woman who actually lives in Vienna, who I've got to know now as a friend. And she said, I don't know what to say. I feel so good in my body. I've never felt like this before. I feel so good. I just can't describe it. My whole body's tingling. It's like it's better than sex. I said, okay, thank you so much. If it's okay with you, I'm going to make that the title of my next book.
Yes, that's a good one. So you said something important there. You said profoundly, they're deeper than their story. So how do you get to this place of instant happiness, Arjuna? How do you get to that place? I guess it's the same name as Radical Awakening.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, it's very simple, Lisa. Maybe you could be a little guinea pig on behalf of on behalf of your listeners.
I love it.
So in this moment, you can hear the sound of my voice, right? Yeah?
Yes.
And that's absolutely given. Everybody on the radio can hear the sound of us speaking. Now, when you hear the sound of my voice, Lisa, just to hear the sound, not to analyze it or think what to say next, but just to hear the sound, do you have to think?
No.
No, it's clear.
Very clear.
You said that immediately. Mm-hmm. Do you have to make any effort or decision to hear the sound of my voice when it's already in your ear?
No.
There's no effort, there's no decision, there's no thought.
Mm-mm.
Do you notice any time delay subjectively experience any time delay between the sound and the experience of the sound?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. So what we've established is that hearing, which is completely natural to you, it's happening right now without thought, without time, without effort. Hearing is intrinsically thoughtless, timeless, and effortless, right?
Yes.
And you say, I hear the sound, don't you? You say that, I hear the sound.
I do. I hear your voice, yes.
So you naturally identify yourself with that which is hearing, with that which is thoughtless, timeless, and effortless. You know yourself to be that which is thoughtless, timeless, and effortless. Now let's just do that again. We're obviously doing this kind of more quickly than we would usually do it because of time restraints, but just look around where you are. I guess you're in the studio. And just look at one object. Just find an object and tell me what it is.
It's the on-air light.
Good. You've got a little light, right? So when you look at the light, do you have to think to see the on-air light?
No. It's right.
Do you have to make any effort or decision to see the light when the light is there?
No, it's right there.
And do you notice any time delay between the light being there and the experience of the light being there?
No, it's right here.
So seeing is also thoughtless, timeless, and effortless, right? In just the same way. Seeing is happening right now, and it's thoughtless, timeless, and effortless. Right?
Yes.
And you say, I see the light. So you identify yourself with that which is seeing.
And that's also, so the whole light, thoughtless, timeless, effortless. Your voice, the light, everything around
me. Hang on, we're not quite done.
Okay.
We're not quite done. So what we've seen is that you know yourself to be that which is hearing and seeing. We don't always pay a whole lot of attention to that. But when we do, we discover that that which you know yourself to be is actually thoughtless, timeless, and effortless. Right? So just for a moment, we can all do this, everybody listening on the radio. What does that seem to be like? It's right here. It's thoughtless, timeless, effortless. It's right here. It is that which is seeing and feeling and hearing. How would you begin to describe it?
Still.
It's still, absolutely. It is stillness itself. What else can you tell me about it?
It's empty in a way.
It's empty, yes. It contains all of this beautiful stuff we call life, but in itself is empty.
And it's nothing at all, and it's quiet. Yeah. It's very quiet.
Yes, it's quiet. Yeah. It's nothing at all. Well, you see, that's a hole in one. That's like, you know, hit the golf ball off the tee and we get a hole in one. You see, you realize there's no journey involved to be what you already are. It only requires a slightly curious disposition. It only requires asking the right questions. If we had a little more time, we could discover together that not only is it what you've said, it's completely still, it's empty, it's also infinite. It has no boundaries.
True.
It is love itself. You see, when we look at anything or anyone from the recognition of this, there is immediately love. This which sees is love itself. Love is not an experience that comes into this. It is love itself. And it is also, perhaps the most important thing for modern people, it is the source from which all creativity arises.
Yes.
Albert Einstein discovered the theory of relativity by laying in the bathtub, resting in spaciousness. Our mutual friend Jack Canfield came up with the title Chicken Soup for the Soul while doing nothing, while meditating. Steve Jobs, before he founded Apple Computer and invented all the things he did, he spent time in India. He spent time exploring consciousness. So accessing this infinite consciousness, learning to rest as this, as who you are, is actually unlocks the real source of all creativity, of all brilliance, and it allows you to give the gift to the world which only you can give.
It's interesting because the opposite of this is numbness.
Yes.
And you realize the opposite when you're in this place of awakeness.
Yes, absolutely. That's so beautifully said. That
it's interesting.
This who you truly are is ultimately alive. It's the opposite of numbness. Ultimately vibrant, alive, and generous, and humorous.
I love that you add laughter into it because it enables you. It bubbles up from within. That laughter. Is that joy, Arjuna?
I think it is. I think it's joy for no cause.
Just always there.
It's joy, which is who you are, instead of something you feel. You mentioned my son Abby. See now. When I became a father, I felt chronically unqualified to father anybody. I had no good role models in my family. So I really had to just relax and allow this spaciousness to be the father.
That's the ultimate in parenting, yes.
The ultimate in parenting is to let the infinite father and motherness take over and do it for you. And you can just step aside and allow that to work, which knows exactly what to do.
Which is the child. It really is just such a simple, beautiful being, is that child's mind.
You know, I really do see, I wouldn't even say believe, I really do see, Lisa, traveling around the world, that it's time now. It's time for humanity not to become spiritual and get on a path. We don't need to do that at all. It's time for humanity to snap its fingers and wake up and to recognize that you don't need to be in a process to become what you already are. You only need to shake off unnecessary, outdated beliefs and to be free. Like a lion shaking its mane, you know, you can, with one shake of the head, you can be free. And then make your life not about working on yourself and healing yourself, but actually giving the gift that you were born to give.
That's what I was saying at the beginning, is that this time that we're alive right now is so fun because, yes, because this information is bubbling to the surface and then overflowing, and people are kind of reaching that place where they've done the path, they've done the searching, they've done the trips, and they've done it. And they are now looking on how to bring it back. I interviewed a woman yesterday who walked the Camino and the 500 miles, and she said her true Camino began when she got home. Because it's easy out there in the path with the beautiful people and the scenery. It's applying it to her life that was her true journey. And so I love that this teaches you how to bring this into a simple day-to-day profoundness of expanding in the moment.
Beautiful.
And what about when things go, oh gosh, we're out of time. I could talk to you forever. When things go up wrong and bring an upset, if you could just answer that question, because I want to know.
Sure. Well, you know, the whole key is, you know, it's like Monopoly. The best way to understand it is like Monopoly. You know, when you play Monopoly, if you land on somebody else's hotel, you've got to pay a bunch of money.
Right.
That's not going to be upsetting for you if you recognize it's a game. That's the whole point. You're playing a game, and that's what happens. You shake your dice, and you've got to give all your money to somebody, land on a hotel, and you laugh because it's a game. If you forget that it's a game, then, of course, it becomes very serious, and you're going to get very upset about it. So this capacity to recognize the spaciousness in which everything's arising, it makes life fun. It makes life a game. And if you win or lose, it doesn't really matter that much to who you are, because you're here to play. You're here to give your gift. You're not here to get, you know, 100,000 Facebook likes or be on the New York Times bestseller, or else you're going to die, you know. You're here to give your gift and let it roll as it does. The satisfaction is in allowing the gift to give itself through you.
Ah, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Arjuna Arda is my guest, and the name of the book is called Better Than Sex. There's a bunch of other books that he's written, 8 other books, including the Translucent Revolution. And you can look up and go through the website as well, because there's so much there. I love the videos that you talk about and really dive into this concept. So they're really, really great. So thank you so much. Thanks for...
It's been a pleasure, Lisa, always.
You too. Thank you. I love connecting with you. I'll see you soon.
See you soon, dear. All right. The best.
You too. Take care. All right. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to The Aware Show.